This is a HeadGum Podcast.
I think I need to change my shirt actually before we start because I'm going to get really hot headbanging. I can already tell.
No, fine.
Do you have a smaller shirt? You might want to put that on too. Punch it!
It's time for Punch the GM.
Punch
the GM.
Hey!
Punch the GM.
Punch
the GM.
What the fuck is happening, brother? Welcome to Punch Up the Jam.
I figure a lot of metalheads are going to listen to this episode first. I just want to make them feel welcome.
Oh, shoot. You're right. Oh, God. I'm going to seem like such a wimp.
Yo, what's up? My name's Miel. I host this podcast every week with the same voice. This isn't a put on to try to appeal to you. What's this podcast about? Let me tell you. I'll tell you right now, brother.
I think I'm just doing Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. You're drawing a lot pretty heavily from Hulk.
Let me start again.
Hey, what's up? My name's Chunt.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
Say that name again.
I don't know. Every time I have to think of a name, I panic. Yeah. This is making the greatest hits even greater. And thank God Henry Bredo's here again.
Woo.
Are you ready for your real intro?
Yeah, I can't wait.
Okay. You know him as my brother, half of Parallel, and the recording artist, Henry Bardo. It's Henry Bredo! I just want to let this roll.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty good. Can we punch this up?
No, that song's very much unpunchable. I think you know that. That's what I meant. Thank you for coming back on, Henry.
Yeah, of course. Are you kidding me?
I'm so happy to have you here. Sometimes having guests on during this pandemic when I'm already operating about 1%, it's too much. And also, I miss you a lot. So I'm kind of getting two birds with one stone here.
Yeah, we're setting two birds free, as Mom would say.
Yes, right. The vegan version of the saying. Speaking of vegan versions of things, not a good segue. I'm sorry about that. Mm-hmm. It's Metallica week here in the tent.
Oh, man. So, yeah, Metallica's, I have a lot to say.
Can you start? Because I am not, I'm just going to say right now, people are going to think, looking at me, that girl looks like she has a scar from a nose ring. I bet she was hardcore. The answer is pop punk and pop punk alone, my friend. Metal's not been my thing.
I was not like a Metallica metalhead guy. I didn't know anything about any of that stuff because I think this album came out before I was born.
It did. It came out in 1991. You were born in 92. That's yeah. A little upsetting.
Yeah, yeah. But I did have 1 year when I was 13 where I thought that was me. I thought I was trying to take on that identity.
A metalhead.
I started hanging around the skate park and really trying to, I begged dad to get me a couple like Slayer, Metallica. A Slipknot was in there. I think that's not the same genre, but you know.
What were you begging him for? T-shirts?
T-shirts, yeah.
Oh my God. I do remember shirts. You got a Metallica shirt. I feel like you wore exclusively for like a year.
Yeah, yeah. I tried to learn how to do a kickflip. I never learned how. I tried to drop in on a mini ramp once and really hurt my back. and then I would just hang out at the skate park and try to impress dudes with my knowledge. I would watch Metallica's documentary every single day for a whole summer.
What's that called?
Some Kind of Monster.
And you've seen it. I've never even heard of it.
It was my go-to movie for a whole summer. Every day I would just do like, I would dive in, do 50 minutes here, 50 minutes there. And I watched a little bit of it because I hadn't seen it in like 15 years. Metallica brings a therapist on tour with them. And when they're trying to make their album. So it's group therapy with Metallica after 5 years of them being apart and hating each other.
Oh.
And it is just a bunch of grown men arguing.
Oh. And you're a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah. I was like, why would a 13-year-old boy enjoy?
Deeply resonated with you.
I don't understand. It was not what I remembered it being at all.
I have a couple of questions which don't need answering. First and foremost, your method of watching movies seems truly anarchic to me.
I'm a movie nihilist, yeah. I like to just blow it up, you know?
That's fine. I understand completely, except that I don't understand Metallica at large. From what I understand, they were established when the drummer, who is like kind of the front man, Lars Ulrich.
I think he helps write the songs. Yeah, him and the front guy write the songs.
Mike Hammerstammer. I didn't write it out on names.
James, I think, is first name.
I'm supposed to do notes, but frankly, who's that for? You know
did
what
you say
I mean?
Mike Hammerstammer?
I did.
Yeah, I don't know who that is. Might be it's the bassist. It could be in the band. I'm not saying he's not. I just, I don't know him. I know the front two guys and then the long-haired dude.
There was one name that jumped out to me about this song, and it wasn't Michael Hammerstammer. It was the producer, who I guess is well known for producing rock records.
He's in the documentary. He played bass.
So you already know his name?
No, God no.
Okay, if you were to like be a terrible improviser making up the name, like a really really bad A to A improv riff of like the name of a rock producer that's so bad,
Bob
what
rock.
Would you? That's his name.
Okay. The second you said that, it came to me. I was like, this can't be right. But I just pulled that out of the vault from being 13 and watching that movie.
Bob Rock.
What I remember about him is he had like a long blonde hair they parted in the middle. And he looked just like Daryl Hammond.
Yep. I'm obsessed with this man. I'm a little bummed Chris Fleming's not on this episode because I know he would have a heyday with Bob Rock.
Bob Rock.
Couple other things I found out about this song. Okay. So there's this guitar riff. There are many in the songs, but there are many. Let me try that again. There are many in this song as well as there are many across all songs.
Can I say one quick thing about Bob Rock?
Please.
I'm remembering these little vignettes of the documentary. There was one scene where Bob Rock was in the studio with them and they were trying to find new sounds. And he's like, hold on, guys. And he brings in a little vibrating like contraption, like almost like a vibrating toothbrush. And he's like, put this on your guitar. And the lead guitar player just sticks this little vibrator onto his strings. And he's like, it's like, rah, 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 and it just sounds insane. And then he looks at Bob Rock and he goes, I think I like this thing. And then they just, that's the whole thing. And they just move on. There's so many scenes like that in this movie where you're just like, what? And they don't address anything.
Sorry to segue off a segue, but I need to announce that when we were making our record tour season that has since come out since the last time you were on the show. Woo! So congrats to us. Stream tour season on everything.
It's
great for fall. We were recording and trying to produce, I think, Mean Something, one of the tracks on the record. When we had the window open and Mom was up vacuuming and we were like, Mom, keep it going. And we like stuck the mic out the window trying to think we were going to get a cool texture. But there were like so many microtones in it that it was like actually quite dissonant. So I was
it wasn't in
Henry,
tune.
Henry, can you melodyne the vacuum?
Yeah, there was also some breeze, some birds, some creaking in there. There was a little too much sauce in there.
I'm just trying to say, I think Bob and Rock and I have a lot in common.
You're definitely the Bob Rock of our group. 100%.
Which is interesting because my name is Jane Indy. Thanks.
Isabel.
So there is a section of the song, this guitar riff, I think right before the breakdown. I think I found it. I'll point it out when the song happens, but I saw this quote from Mike Hammerstammer. Again, I will not bother learning any of their names. Why? It's no one cares. You can Google it.
That might literally be the bass player for all I know, so we'll just go with it.
Certainly not. I've never gotten a name right. I will meet a person, learn their name, and 1 second later, I do not know their name. I cannot memorize names.
Yeah.
But anyways, he admitted finally all these years that he just ripped it from a Heart song. But not from the Heart song directly. No, from the sample they used of the Heart song in the Ice-T song, Personal. I think I found the part he's referencing. It's in a different key, but...
Take it personal.
That little walk down. Do you hear that part? I think that is virtually identical to after that guitar solo in the bridge here. I'll point it out when it happens in the tune, but I found that very interesting.
It's not jumping out to me, but I feel it. I feel the energy is similar.
The other thing I want to mention is that these are not the original lyrics to this song.
What were the original lyrics?
The original lyrics were not about the Guardians character, the Sandman, the Rise of the Guardians character.
Is that what the song's about?
It's clearly not about the animated feature no one saw, Rise of the Guardians. That's largely a Santa hit piece, but it is about the Sandman like sprinkling sleep on the children. Which I have a lot of questions about, but again, don't want to get ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah, yeah.
Originally, the song was about destroying a perfect family. I believe it involved like maybe a crib death of a baby and like a huge, horrible secret of some kind. Mm. And Bob Rock and Ulrich went to James Hetfield. Is that his name?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. James. Yep.
And they actually were like, hey, my guy, I think you could give this another swing. And he was like, fuck you. And then he did. And they were right.
Dude, he famously forbid anyone in the band from telling him how to write lyrics. It was a big thing.
But he did. Yeah, he listened on this song. And it, I mean, I don't know that like a Crib Infanticide song could have cracked 500K on Spotify, but maybe. Wait,
that's
500K?
Unreal.
500 million. What am I saying?
500 mil. Yeah, yeah.
The last thing I want to say, I feel like you can watch the documentary if you want to hear about Metallica. I'm more interested in the niche tidbits that appeal to me personally. So I was tipped by my patron, Naomi Arjo Monkermani. She said, oh, I truly hope that Metallica's class action lawsuit a la Napster is mentioned. My brothers all received subpoenas because of it.
What?
So I was like, what is she talking about? So I researched it. Metallica was the first highly publicized instance of an artist suing a P2P like sharing system. They sued Napster for a minimum of $10 million in damages at a rate of $100,000 per illegally downloaded song.
Wait, that's not how much a song costs. That seems overpriced.
Henry, I think we might have dramatically underpriced on Bandcamp.
Whoa. I knew they had a lawsuit with Napster, or Napster, right?
It was Napster, yeah.
And it was one of the factors that tore them apart for like 5 years and basically broke up the band. And if all their listeners were getting subpoenas, I feel like that would make sense.
I mean, Naomi's brothers, shout out to you and your subpoenas.
That makes a lot of sense. Wow.
Okay, that's all the notes I had. Is there anything you want to add before we get into this tune?
Man, well, do you know anything about Lars Ulrich in general?
Other than he's a drummer, and that once I was on an episode of All Fantasy Everything when Sean Jordan insisted that he is the voice of SeaTac, and I did not fact check that. By the way, if this is the last episode that comes out before the election, please vote. Okay, are you ready to get into the song?
Let's hear it. God, that pumps you up. Oh, yeah.
The drums are so present.
Well, yeah, that's Lars at work. You know he's tapping that mix engineer. He's like, a little louder. No, just a little louder. Okay, this is the edging anthem.
I'm so glad you brought that up. This is the first episode where we're trying this new soundboard thing Marissa just helped me set up. So this is the first time someone's seeing what I title my clips on my end. And she was like, well, so I noticed that clip number two is called Intro Comes.
Oh, man.
Let it be known you C-U-M-S, comes, intro comes.
Thank you, Marissa, voice of God.
You're very welcome.
Also, let it be known how perfect my impression of you was. Thank you for the side-by-side. I cannot hear this and not think about, and I'm sure this is a universal experience, even though I've never said it out loud, high school boys basketball breaking through the banner to dribble around the court for a warm-up before the game.
I don't know if no one's going to get that reference, but this is the song that would play in the the packed arena in our high school. It wasn't an arena.
By arena, we mean a 50-person gymnasium, but yes.
Full of dads and has-beens. So basically, this would scream on the speakers, and it would build and build, and then they'd all bust through a fucking banner, and it was just, I mean, I thought that was the epic thing for me.
Just so you understand, Henry, what was our school class? Like the league of our school was like the absolute lowest.
Oh, B.
With 12 kids to choose from for your starting lineup.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So just to be clear, probably the least justified use of this song as a warm-up song by any sports team ever.
Yeah.
However, my first association with this song, which in hindsight is very disgusting, is at 13 or 12, before I'm even in high school, going to the high school's, the varsity boys basketball games to ogle the boys as I'm going through puberty, being like, this is what sexy is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you see their parts bouncing in those shorts, you know?
I think, to be fair, it was mostly the song. I think it was just the song got me really jacked
with all my hormones. You can cut that last part. It was the song for me, too.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh man, that's the bus right there. We bust through. And now we're doing layups. Now we're high-fiving, slapping asses. Oh man.
Welcome to the stage.
It takes me right back. So I was in middle school when that was happening. And
yes.
Obviously our coach, I don't want to name him, but I almost did. He got wind of this and he's like, you know what we need, guys? And this is for our middle school games where there's maybe four people in the stands and
you're the highest scoring game ever played is like 15 to 20.
Yeah. No, we can barely make layups. It's shooting at three-pointers off the table.
The warm-up is just bouncing off the backboard, flying across the court.
So he goes, you know what we need? We need some of this. But obviously those gyms, like they're like the third tier gym at a high school, so it's like there's no sound system to be heard of. So, and we didn't have Bluetooth speakers, so one guy would bring a boombox with us to every game, and he would do this for our games. But there's no banner; it's just a bunch of little chubby kids like bouncing out.
12-year-olds,
like I
airing threes.
It just throwing some air balls, like shooting half court shots. Like some kids are shooting in the wrong basket, and this song is just playing off a puny little boombox. It was so depressing.
Oh, but it still does the trick. I am jacked.
You got me pumped.
I'm already coughing phlegm. I've already unlodged things that have been there since I was 13. Yeah.
Feelings.
I don't know. I think my blood actually does get hotter. Like by the time that's come in, I wouldn't be able to enter MoMA right now. My temperature's too hot. I'd get flagged by the head scan. I'm too hot.
Absolutely.
After listening to that.
You're in detention center after that, without a doubt.
You know what I think? Hearing this song, it makes me feel like my life is a detention center, and I only realized it once I listened to this song.
Oh, it woke you up.
It wakes me up. Like, if you want to, I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, the left, the reason we are not able to radicalize people the way the right is because we don't have good branding for our pundits, and we do not appeal enough to Facebook crowd. So what we really need, I don't remember how I got on this tangent.
I think you're trying to radicalize people right now. I think that's what.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, we need
a song like this.
Oh, cool. Okay. I mean, we could probably take this.
Do you think Lars Ulrich? I'm not gonna get into that. Okay.
Okay. What I will say on that topic is, I know the lead singer in the middle of making the album in 2003, not this one. He took a sabbatical to go and hunt bear in Russia. In the middle of them making an album, and he missed his son's first birthday, he said, to go on a whim hunt bear. So we'll see.
Okay, well, that shines a different light on things. My vegan segue earlier, especially bad now. Tight. Okay, now we're gonna sing a lullaby. So strap in, because it takes a turn. Still goes. Wait, he just sang
I've never heard the lyrics in my life.
He said, say your prayers, little one. Don't forget, my son, to include everyone.
That's kind of sweet.
Except that you just told us he missed his son's first birthday to go bear hunting in Russia.
True. Yeah. Well, maybe that's what he's saying to him from Russia. He called him and he's like, hey, happy birthday, little Cletus. I need you.
15 years after writing the song.
He's, don't forget to say your prayers. Okay, I got to go now. There's some vodka arriving.
It's also so funny. I mean, I don't think I'm ever going to get over how funny it is that this song is. I mean, I guess it's like a poppier metal tune. It's not like Norwegian death metal, but at the same time, like it does sound pretty aggressive. And he's singing literally like about a little kid going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like a little kid having a nightmare is so low stakes compared to an adult having a nightmare.
Little kid nightmares are about like dinosaurs.
Yeah, like my worst nightmare as a kid was like, actually, it was pretty fucked. I jumped on daddy's belly and all of his guts came out of his mouth.
Number one, don't call him daddy. Number two, that's absolutely fucked up. And I wish you hadn't told me that.
But as an adult, they're way more fucked up.
If I told you my dreams on air right now, I'd be in jail by tomorrow morning.
Oh, actually, let me just say, couldn't have had those dreams as a kid. I wasn't fucked up enough yet.
Right. You didn't know enough. You didn't have enough ammo.
No, I know way too much now. Are you kidding? Yeah. In the digital age? Okay. And then he goes on. I'm sorry, but to be singing like this and singing, don't forget my son to include everyone. Like, it's such a sweet sentiment.
I think he's aiming for syllables and sounds. I think the words are secondary. Because that shit bangs, dude. It fits right in there. It sits right in that melody. I don't even know what he's saying. I don't care.
The best part's even better. I tuck you in, all within. Keep you free
from sin. Until the Sandman he goes. That's why we play basketball to it. He talks about free throws. Now I remember that. I always used to hear that and be like, I sunk that fucking free throw. I got you, James.
I'm sorry, Henry. Did you think he sung free throw?
He says, keep your free throws in. Doesn't he? Wait, what's he saying?
So in your mind, this song's like kind of about lullabies and kids and whatever, but then there's like one errant line about free throws.
He's telling his kid, like, when I'm gone, you're playing basketball or whatever, you keep those free throws in, dude.
I tuck you in.
Yes.
Warm within.
Yes.
Keep you free from sin.
Oh, shit. Are you serious?
Keep those free throws in until the Sandman.
Play it again. It sounds exactly like that. My whole life, I thought that's what he said. Keep your free throws in. You're telling me that doesn't sound like that to you? Put a vote or poll or something, dude. He's saying, I mean, I believe you.
I'll put a poll up on Twitter. Punch up the gym Twitter. I'll say, what do you hear? Free throws, free from.
I'll decimate you. I guarantee I'll get 100%.
This is what you said when you said Cocoa Puff scratches your mouth up more than Captain Crunch. I threw up that poll. You were proved very wrong within an hour.
This is my redemption.
It's also like, I think he's really misconstruing the concept of the Sandman. Like, I don't... The Sandman is like a mythical beast who like sprinkles the nightshade on the children to sleep and slumber.
You know who the Sandman I equate him to in my mind?
Spider-Man 2.
No. The... What is he called? I don't really know what he's called. Like, he's a fish monster from Shape of Water. That's the Sandman
to
me.
Oh, you mean my... boyfriend? You mean that ripped little hottie, like that water sign Cancer? What is he, a Scorpio? Do we know?
He's got a Sandman vibe though, right? Like he would slither in and give you a little sand, but he's sweet. But the Sandman, you don't think he's a sweet guy?
I imagine Sandman. I'm imagining Ghost of Christmas Past, Christmas Carol. I'm imagining like a little sprite that's like spling splung splung, and like a little sleep to you and one more sleep for you, child.
He puts the sand in your eyes, right? That's the theory.
Yeah, which, by the way, like, for the Sandman to bring sleep and not sand, I feel very misled. Like, who do I call when I need sand? The Sleep Man? You guys check out my special on Netflix. It's 1 minute.
Yeah, that is confusing.
It's netflix.corn because they would not take it. Thank you. Sleep with one eye open. Ripping your pillow. I'm sorry to cut it there, but sleeping with one eye open defeats the very purpose of the Sandman.
Maybe saying sleep with one eye open because when your eyes are open, when you sleep, you don't get sand.
Have you tried?
Well,
we're going to throw up a poll on Twitter. Have you slept with one eye open and did you get sand?
According to my wife, she has caught me a couple times sleeping with both eyes open and she doesn't like it.
That's not true.
Yeah. She's walked in there and I've just been looking at her in the morning. And she goes,
Henry.
Hey. And I'm not awake.
Henry.
And
oh,
she has
no.
filmed it.
I'm going to have to soft block you for a few months after this. That's really upsetting.
Yeah, it's not her favorite thing.
Okay, well, do you have sand in your eyes when you at least wake up from your eye open slumber? Fucking Christ.
No, I'm pretty sure eye open sleeps, you don't get sand. It's the crust of your closed lids, I think, that causes it.
Okay, so then Lars Ulrich, no, that's not who sings it.
James.
Jeffrey Grimson, he is telling us a little hack. That's
a
this
little
whole
hack.
Song is a little hack. Hey, guys, you're tired of waking up with eye crusties. Sleep with your eyes open.
Sleep with one eye open.
And if you hold your pillow tight, you'll probably prop your head up enough that those eyes will stay open.
I gravitate towards that line, though, gripping your pillow tight, you know? Because I was a pretty scared kid.
Oh, Henry.
And so I would be like... Maybe I will. I thought gripping it tight would like you'd get some sort of control over it.
I think that's what he's suggesting. If you can just grip your pillow, you won't be punished by the Sandman, which I think is a... I personally would love to have some free sand. Sand is very expensive.
I think now he's the Sandman saying, like, let's do this. What are the lyrics?
Exit light.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Enter night.
Gotcha. Going to sleep.
Take my hand. We're off to Never Neverland.
Okay.
He's actually really Peter Pan. This is a Peter Pan move.
Or Michael Jackson.
Or Peter, yes, Peter Pan 2, Michael Jackson.
Or maybe Peter Jackson.
Or Peter Jackson.
This is a synopsis of Lord of the Rings 2, right? The Two Towers.
I think he met, okay, am I an idiot? I mean, don't answer that. We know the answer. Never Neverland. Is that used as like a terminology for the place you go when you sleep?
No.
That's Slumberland.
Yeah. It's a common dream though, I'm sure.
Never Neverland?
I've a lot of kids probably. Wait, are the Peter Pan kids? I've never seen Peter Pan. Are they sleeping when they
what?
Go? I've never seen it.
Oh my God, Henry. You've never seen The Lion King. You've never seen Aladdin. You've never seen Peter Pan. I was a terrible older sister to you. What did you do all day? Stare at a rock?
Pony Hawk Pro Skater and some kind of monster.
Well, Peter Pan lives in Never Neverland, where you can go and never grow up.
But when the kids go to sleep, that's where they go, right? Or are they awake when they go? That's where I'm not clear.
They sure seem awake. But frankly, I don't remember. I was mostly in it for Tiger Lily.
Okay. I thought maybe Peter Pan was like a nice Freddy Krueger.
I mean, he definitely, the introduction's at night, and also the ride at Disneyland is at night. So he does take them in the night a la Sandman. But I don't think it's contingent on them being asleep, is it? I think he's just as a little sneaky night devil. I just am so confused with the Never Neverland. Marissa, can you jump back on? Is Never Neverland used to refer to Sleeping Town, or is that a Peter Pan reference?
That's a Peter Pan reference.
Okay, thank you.
I think.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
That is the authority. Thank you, Marissa. That is a Peter Pan reference. So the Sandman, we're really losing the threads here. This part's the best part.
It's the best part of the song.
Oh!
I forgot about that. Something's wrong, something light. Maybe not tonight. And they are so white. I want to run through a brick wall right now.
Okay, James McMinimal. I'm never going to learn his name. I'm not sorry. I think he could have done a third pass on these lyrics. I'm so sorry. I think the guitar and the drums are really care. The vocal, I will say the vocal performance is amazing.
His sound of his voice is incredible. I dig
it. And the rhymes and the line, the sounds and the line lengths, it's all really working. But then when you really pay attention to what he's saying, it makes it really hard to headbang.
What are the lyrics to this part?
Well, he starts with my favorite line to start with on any song. Something's wrong.
Something's wrong.
Something's wrong. Shut the light. He's using some strong verb choices here. Exit light, shut the light. I don't think he's ever turned a light off in his life.
Enter night.
Heavy thoughts tonight. And they aren't of Snow White.
Wait, that's the last line of that?
Something's wrong. Shut the light. Heavy thoughts tonight. And they aren't of Snow White.
And they aren't of Snow White. Wow. Because those would be good. Those would be good dreams.
Unlike the Sandman, who's notorious for giving you pink eye. I don't know. What's the lore of the Sandman? I really am not threatened by a crusty eye. I kind of like picking off eye crust in the morning. It feels kind of good.
It does feel good. Dude, has anyone ever done ASMR of picking their eye crusties out?
No, the thing is, it grosses me out, but it does feel good.
It feels so good. God, that should be, I would pay to have someone put eye crusties in just to pull them out. That's a business opportunity.
I think you really fucked up with this villain here. I think I'm more scared of Snow White than I am the Sandman. What's she gonna do?
Well, Snow White's situation is far worse than this.
Yeah.
She got pretty fucked over.
You're gonna be in charge of seven men.
Yeah. You're nightmare. Gonna get drugged.
Yeah. The way he sings it, you would never know this is what he's saying. But this is all child's play because the next line I have just named best part because it is categorically the best part lyrically. Dreams of war, dreams of lies, dreams of dragons,
fire, and the things that will fight. Wait, what?
I've grabbed a fake isolated vocal version. It's just like somebody made this, you know? Dreams of war, dreams of lies, dreams of dragons, fire, and the things that will fight.
I'm pretty sure that's Howard Dean at the end. I'm not positive, but I would if I was a betting man.
It's like a really, really rich man trying to like mush his horses in a storm.
Yeah.
He said it wasn't any easier to understand in the isolated vocal. Dreams of war. Okay, so he's telling us the things that aren't Snow White that he alluded to before.
Right.
War. What's worse than war, of course? How can you follow war, right? Dreams of liars.
Dreams of war. Dreams of liars. Okay.
And then what's, okay, A to C, what's worse than liars? War.
Cheats?
Liars.
Scoundrels?
Henry, you're thinking too small. Bigger. Okay. Bigger. Okay. Bigger. Dreams of.
Taxes.
Bigger. What's a tax's worst enemy?
Genocide.
Very close. Dragon's fire.
Dreams of dragon's fire?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, that sounds whimsical. It's not real. I've never had a scary dream about something that's not real.
Henry, all of that is, again, child's play, because the last line of that... He was really strapped to think of scary things. I think he had, this is like Jay-Z's verse on Monster. He was like, I don't know, goblins, ghouls, vampires. Like, he like couldn't think of anything scary. Even though he starts with real thing, fake thing. And then he's like, I don't know, I guess I could say like scared of your parents dying. But instead he's like, and of things that will bite. Yeah.
Like a dog or a cat or a...
He could not think of a singular biting object. He just had to say, things that will bite. So we got
things that
spiders.
Will bite. It's so
children,
vague.
Babies. Birds. Lizards. My lizard bit me all the time.
People.
I started with people. Come on. Obviously. Children. Big time into biting. We got dogs. We
nursing
got cats.
Kids.
Of course. On the nip. Yikes. That is pretty scary. He wasn't wrong, but he also...
Barks.
No, we said bites. No barks. Things that will bite.
Yeah, barks has bite.
Oh. I had a nightmare about a really spicy root beer. It was too much flavor.
Oh, man. I miss barks. God damn. I could go for a barks right now.
Okay. Actually, that's a great opportunity to take a quick break. And we're back. Still laughing about the things that will bite. I have nothing funny to say about it. I just need a second to laugh about it. Okay, then we get to the second chorus. Sleep with one eye open. It's like kind of sexy, this part.
It is. It's got that different feel. Oh, I love that. Don't.
Lucky.
Dude, the crazy thing about it is that the drum sounds so good, but famously...
That's so crazy.
Well, what's weird is famously Lars Ulrich has drumsticks. I think I talked about this on our last episode that I was obsessed with as a kid that I thought were so cool that were made out of black titanium.
Which sound like shit, right?
With plastic tips. Not only do they sound like shit, but... Unless you have a cymbal endorsement, you're going to go through a lot of cymbals with metal drumsticks. Just literally busting every piece of drum hardware you own is just going to turn into like sawdust.
I do the same thing, but only because I have an anger problem.
They sound so amazing. I just wonder if... I don't believe he actually used them. Every time
Henry,
I hear Metallica...
Do you think any celebrity endorsement actually is endorsing what they are selling?
That's the thing.
Like, do you think for one second, like, Jonathan Van Ness is, like, actually all about Biossance? Like, no, my guy's using, like, $600 bottle products. Like, this is just, they're peddling the product, and you're just a little chump who fell for it.
I did fall for it. I wrote Dad a letter asking for it for Christmas. And I got it. And then I broke my drums. Thanks, Lars.
Lars, I take back when I invited you on the show earlier. We are not cool, my guy. You crushed a little boy's heart.
Maybe he could buy me some new drums with that $350 million he has from his paintings.
And then, finally we have this guitar solo, which in my opinion should end at the obvious first ending point, but for some reason goes on for another whole section. Here you go. Very Soundgarden to me. So it should end here.
I mean, you gotta keep it going.
No.
Oh, he's back. Oh yeah, it should have ended there. I think.
It should have ended.
Yeah, I mean, as is the case with most guitar solos. Oh, he's still going.
I don't need this.
I'm pretty sure we cut this part out from our basketball warm up. I don't remember this.
Then here, listen. I think that's the Ice-T reference. This part slaps, though.
I think I've never heard this guitar solo. I'm pretty sure I cut this out in GarageBand.
I don't like it. I'm sorry. I'm not a guitar solo aficionado, but the first part sounds like Tom Morello to me, and the second part sounds like Slash to me.
I'm losing steam. The momentum's going away from me.
Well, why would you start high, hit a peak, and then go low? I don't get it. Is this tantric? Like, why are we still going?
I think he demands a certain amount of bars. You know, it's his time to shine.
Well, he didn't. I don't feel like he shoned.
Well, they had a whole thing that, like, you can't. They couldn't write lyrics, and no one else could write lyrics, and no one else could. So then Lars Ulrich was like,
okay, why are you saying else? I think we could just say no one could write lyrics.
And then the rule was, okay, well, if I can't write lyrics, you can't comment on the drums. And then they're like, okay, well, if I can't comment on the drums, you can't comment on the guitar. Like, that literally is what happened. That's why they had a riff.
Famously, the key to any collaboration is you may not comment on anything I do. Well, fine then. You can't comment on anything I do.
That is exactly what happened to Metallica. That's why their music got so bad.
Well, that's probably why then their bridge is just like literally a page from a Bible. Like,
that's why they had 3 hours of group therapy you can watch on the internet.
This is so creepy.
I kind of dig this. It's like Serge Gainsbourg-y. Oh. Yeah, I don't like that. It's just the beast under your bed. Armies are cool. In your closet, in your head. Oh my god.
I'm sorry.
In your head. I didn't realize they went up there. That's pretty like triumphant.
It's so triumphant. This trilogy of beasts is really excited to be hitting that harmony.
That's just like so poppy and like on the nose. I didn't expect it.
Henry, you didn't expect it? After the Snow White reference, you didn't expect it?
I guess you're right. I don't know what to expect from this song. I dig it, though. It's classic.
So the first part was just like that. I'm sorry, I don't know what this is called. Like, spooky lullaby churchy thing. The like, you know, thing you say, whatever. And then the second part when he like changes voice from being like Bill Callahan and now he's suddenly like creepy boogeyman.
Right.
He's like, hush little baby. Don't say a word. We're not going to do the Mockingbird this time. No, never mind that voice. Sorry, that noise you heard.
Oh.
Which, I'm sorry to reference another band here, but are we thinking the same thing? 1, 2, 3, Sugar Ray.
Shut the door, baby.
Don't say a word.
That is one of the creepier lines.
It's just the beast under your bed. And I was like, okay, all right, now we're getting some story. There's a beast under the bed. And I guess it's the Sandman, or now it's a different beast.
What's with is the name a command? Like, enter Sand. Like, what is the name? I don't get the name. Enter Sandman. No,
it's stage directions, because this was originally a musical.
Enter Sandman, stage left.
52, down on his luck. Penny loafers that have seen better days.
Enter Sandman.
It's like insane that has not been adapted for a CW drama.
It's just a strange way to phrase it, right? I always it just felt supernatural to me, though, as a kid. I loved it.
Well, it might be the beast under your bed, in your closet, in your head. Wait a second. This was the first draft of Monsters, Inc. I will be taking no further questions. There's so many. What the fuck is this song about? What is it about? Just what, like, genuinely, not trying to be funny. What is it about?
I think it was an idea first. That's what it feels like. It's like an idea of like, let's make a spooky song about sleep. You know what I mean? Like a sleep song.
What if we made a scary lullaby?
Yeah, a scary lullaby. And they're like, okay, we need lyrics now. Like, well, that's harder than the first part. So where do we go from here?
I'm an ideas guy, not an execution guy.
Right. And then Lars is like, listen, James, that's your job. And he was like, okay, I need to go kill some bear first and then drink some vodka. And then he just like three months later, this is what he had.
I can't get over Enter Sandman. He's such a good point. It never comes up in the song. The Sandman himself gets he gets named once in the whole song. Never again.
Yeah.
So we actually really don't know who is singing the choruses from who's. And also at the beginning, he's like trying to help this boy. And then in the rest, he's just describing scary things. I don't know who he is as a narrator. Right. I don't know which monster I'm supposed to be scared of. It's like a cabin in the woods of a song, just like a revolving door of scary things.
Yeah, it's actually perfect for Halloween.
Oh, my God. Look at us. We chose a perfect song.
This is our spooky anthem.
Although, are you feeling spooked? Because I'm not feeling it yet.
I mean, we're getting pretty close.
I will say it's the end of the song that's the spookiest part for me. And I will be resorting back to the isolated vocals for that. But not before we have our final chorus. Sand, hear it?
He said rain of sand? Exit light. That's the end. Oh, my God. No, it's not.
Not before my favorite part. He did change one lyric that time. We got one more reference to sand. And I believe you screamed rain of sand, which is deeply upsetting to be related to you in that moment, since what rhymes with rain of sand but makes sense, Hen?
Rain of sand. Brain of man?
Henry.
No.
What's the form of sand?
The beach.
And what do we call those little pieces, Henry?
Oh, baby rocks.
I hate you so much. I hate you so much.
God's dandruff.
Yeah, he said, God's dandruff, eggs in light. I think he could have done more vocally. I'm sorry. I think his vocals are amazing, but I do think he could have taken like a couple more riffs because he does the night like four times.
Yeah,
One time, like subvert the expectation. Like,
if it ain't broke, dude.
Yeah, he got tired. And he also, like, I think he really wore himself down trying to think of beasts.
Yeah. And trying to think of just spooky nighttime beings.
But the it still really works for me. Like, I feel good about it.
I want to run out of something every time I hear it.
Someone I saw on YouTube's comment that was like, I don't know why, but this song makes me want to foot race a horse. I was like, yeah.
I could run down some cobblestones to this for sure.
I think that's a bull. I think horses are usually on like a track. But yeah, like let's Ernest Hemingway it. We're gonna run with the bulls to Metallica.
I'd love to fight a bull to this song, you know? Just get on top of that
fist
thing and
fight.
You're
like, those matadors got it all wrong. Fuck a cape, give me some brass knuckles and let me at that bull.
That is very Hulk Hogan-y. Does he have a sex tape out? The lead singer of this band?
Maybe James Christofferson?
I feel like he would.
And that. I don't think they knew how to end it.
It's getting into a meandering territory at this point.
And the guitar's like, I guess I'll do this.
Oh, they fade out.
Yeah.
That little guitar at the end was really odd.
What do you mean? I think
it sounded like the guitar player was like, all right, next song. And they were like, no, we're still playing this song. He's like, well, I'm already playing a different song.
That's like when the live show, when they're doing the like noodling to transition between songs.
Yes, to transition. That started the transition. And then all the players looked at him with beady eyes. And he was like,
not yet. Not sorry. Yet. I want to see if I can hear that without the band.
Oh my God, that sounds like the beginning of Thriller.
Oh. Yeah!
It's the yo that I want.
Yo!
Oh my God. That was a pretty cool run.
That is how I greet my friends over the Zoom.
Yo!
Jason.
I think I was right to start this podcast impersonating Hulk Hogan. That's exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, he's absolutely doing a Hulk Hogan impression.
I'm sorry. I'm going to offend Metallica fans, but like...
I think we already have pretty thoroughly by
okay,
now.
So if you're still here, this is a safe space. Is Metallica like notable for anything specific to Metallica? Because it's feeling pretty derivative to me of other bands around this time.
No, his voice is very unique. The guitar tone is like a thing in itself.
You don't feel like if you took... Okay, this is so ignorant. Again, I don't know shit about metal, but like to me, I'm hearing Audioslave, I'm hearing Guns N' Roses. And I'm like, isn't this just kind of a marriage of them?
No, I hear a different thing. The drum tones sound very, like the way that, I'm not trying to like stand Lars Ulrich right now, but he has a unique style. I'm going to say that.
Do you think that, just quick sidebar, he sold metal drumsticks because his band's called Metallic?
Or because he was in bed with big drums and they were trying to drum up business.
I can't handle the wordplay you just did. Before I figure out how to punch this up, I do want to hear what Rob Moose has to say. Rob, who, when I texted him the song pick, I was like, I don't know why. I feel like you're going to love this one. He's like, you don't know why? Because I've been asking to do Metallica for like 4 weeks. And I was like, oh, sorry about that. But I sent it with lasers effect. So I think you'll forgive me.
Wow, this is a song 9-year-old me knows really well, but that I don't believe I've heard since about 1998. In reviewing it today, I was really struck by the extended intro and wanted to talk about it in nerdy detail because there's actually a lot going on. I think we would all agree that it's really evil sounding, but why is that? Not only do we have an E minor chord, the lowest minor chord on a normally strung guitar, but there's the use of a sinister passing note, the flatted fifth, B flat, a tritone away from the root. This interval was deemed unholy and discouraged in early choral music for its unstable dissonant nature. I think the very splashy hi-hat backbeat actually makes it feel even scarier, as it's such an innocent little rhythmic delineation played in an almost hopeful, encouraging way against this foreboding theme. In bar 5, we get a little electric guitar overdub on the E minor chord, flexing that wah-wah pedal, which in this context feels certainly not funky, but full of fire. I love how in bar 8, the cymbal pattern switches from offbeats to all 4 beats, as if Mr. Lars is counting himself into the next section. There's a big shift there as the drum approach switches entirely to bass drum and toms, and the bass guitar enters. After 4 bars of this, we switch gears again, and the guitar melody that used to feel scary is replaced by something much more immediate and downright dangerous. And of course, louder and more distorted. 4 bars later, we add another scary note, the flatted second, F natural, to this evolving take on the intro. This is helping the tonality feel even more unstable and giving listeners less and less to rest on as the guitar starts to feel more like a percussion instrument and less like a harmonic guide. The other cool detail in this section is that an emphasis on the end of 4 emerges from the moment that the distorted guitar comes in and plays the E an octave higher on that beat. Eventually, the drums start to emphasize this placement too. This is another way in which the music is destabilized, so to speak. We have a prominent flatted second and tritone, thwarting easy harmonic definition. And then the emphasis of the beat starts getting pretty foreign to how we would normally feel something in 4-4. And this is important because what becomes the main riff of the song, introduced at 58 seconds, starts on that end of 4 and ties into the downbeat. So the rhythmic displacement is actually a prominent feature of the song. Wow, even I didn't know I could talk about the intro of this song for so long, but I think it's important because I don't feel like this style of music gets enough credit, at least from the casual listener, for how compositional and thoughtful it is underneath the angst and violent volume. Primarily, the intro of this song gets us all pumped for the actual thing to start, but it also establishes and manipulates some pretty interesting content, and if you wrote it down and looked at it on a score, I think you'd be at least a little bit impressed. Now there's some vindication for the 9-year-old violin player in me who couldn't get enough of this music. I can see now that it was more connected to what I was studying than I realized. And if you like to jam out to this, I'm all for it. 90s forever, baby.
He's He's amazing.
I love him. You can hear how happy he is to finally realize that, like, his little 9-year-old ear was picking up something that none of us would ever hear.
Oh, yeah.
I do want to comment on two things he said that he should at me next time. Rob, the next time you want to talk about flat fives, tag me. And the next time you want to mention violent volume, please also tag me. Thank you so much.
That was amazing.
Okay, so that actually is really relevant information for me because the punch-up idea I had in mind, I don't know why I'm doing this to myself. This is going to be so much work. I'm like, okay, this song's really scary, but the lyrics don't really gel with that. The lyrics are the lyrics are like trying to tell me that It's a Small World is a scary ride, but it's just simply not. Like you can make it sound scary, but it's not scary. So I want them to make more sense together. And I could make the lyrics scarier. And maybe that would be more Halloween appropriate. However, I'm not interested in destroying my voice. So instead, what if I make the music happier?
Absolutely. It's a great idea.
What if I make like an indie girl cover, like in the worst possible way?
Are there good ways of doing that?
No, that's what I'm saying. I want this to sound like a really bad iPod commercial from 2002.
Are you going to pull the ukulele out maybe?
If I had one, I think I'm going to have to resort to a synth just for my own limitations. But yes, yes, you're exactly getting the vibe, the accent, everything. And I don't think I'm going to change any of the words. Let's see. I'm going to show you how much it still works.
Yeah, I mean, but the lyrics are kind of at odds with the tone of the song. I love it.
So we got to make a match. That's the only way to make it better. I can't compete in this space. It's already so good as a headbanging anthem.
You're not going to get any more haunted than that.
So we got to make it worse. And that is what I will do.
Show the true colors.
And I will put it right here.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now for world premiere.
Enter Sandman, except now it's the lullaby that it clearly was always supposed to be.
Oh man, that was incredible. How did you do that?
You listen, it's between me and the Sandman. Let's get to Unpunchable Jams.
You can't punch this.
Henry?
Yeah.
Hey, really quick, before you say your Unpunchable Jam, just because I don't know if you'll be back on this podcast, and I do feel the need to tell this story. Do you remember that time when you were like 5 and I was like 8 and we were jumping on the trampoline with Minnie and her friend, Minnie being my older sister, of course. And we tricked you and like you fell off the trampoline for some reason and we thought it was really funny, but then we soon felt very guilty about it. Remember this story?
Yeah.
And then we...
No, it sticks out as a trauma. Yeah, no, I remember it.
And then we tried to make amends, not by just saying, hey, sorry about that, Henry, or, you know, any normal thing to do. Instead, we just gathered a bunch of herbs and branches and decorated
Henry.
In like a... And chanted your name for about an hour until you came back out.
Yeah.
So what's your Unpunchable Jam?
So, so, well, you just brought me back.
Here, wait, let me give you one more time.
You can't punch this.
Right.
Henry, okay. What's your Unpunchable Jam?
For my Unpunchable Jam, I am going to go with a song by Bill Callahan. You actually mentioned him earlier in the podcast.
And As I Lay Me Down to Sleep.
He's probably one of my very favorites songwriters and singers, actually. he has a song called Jim Kane that I listen to constantly. That it's like one of the songs where if I just don't know what to listen to, I put that on. It's never wrong.
With the death of the shadow came a lightness of verse. But the darkest of nights in truth still dazzle. And I work myself until I'm frazzled.
It fits every vibe.
It fits every vibe. Yeah, Marie and I listen to it in the car. Like, it's on every road trip. It's like number one.
Jim Kane.
It's a slow burner.
Who is Jim Kane? Do we know?
Absolutely no idea.
Maybe you know what? I bet he does.
What's that?
Bites. I'm so sorry. I love Bill Callahan, and I'm very excited to hear this song. I don't think I've ever heard it. Thank you.
Oh, man. It's off that record with the horse on the front. It's like Sometimes I Wish I Was an Eagle or something.
I only know the one that's like got like a pastoral landscape. I've only listened to that record.
Apocalypse.
Yes. So I'm very excited
that
to
check this
out.
That record's amazing. It's before that. It's a little earlier, but he's not old at all when this record came out, but he somehow sounds like he's like 80.
Oh, I love an old voice.
Mm. He's my favorite old voice.
He's finally,
I think he's like early 40s. He's finally starting to fit his voice, but his whole like in his 20s and stuff too. He always sounded like he was like 60.
Oh, I love that. Well, mine's kind of a similar thread in that note because I'm going with Lucy Dacus. Is that how you say your last name? Lucy Dacus, I believe. Night Shift.
You've got a 9 to 5, so I'll take the night shift. And I'll never see you again if I can help it. In 5 years, I hope the songs feel like covers dedicated to new.
I can't stop listening to it lately. I can't stop playing it lately. It's one of those 2-for-1 songs where like the first half is very different than the second half. It's actually really like a rock song, and her voice is so from the lungs, you know, like it's not something you can put on. It's so beautiful. I can't believe she's so young. Her voice is incredible.
I've never heard it.
What? Really? She hits this octave. She jumps a whole octave above the melody at the very end as what I would deem the climax of the song, and every time I just tweet it, I melt into like an Alex Mack puddle. I torture myself listening to it. It hurts in the best way. You have to check it out, Henry.
Damn, let's hit it.
You know what else you have to check out?
What's that?
I've now switched. I'm pulling. Yeah, Henry, have you heard of the Bible? This shit slaps. I'm now pivoting the you to the royal you. You should check out our album.
Woo!
Did that feel
natural?
And
if you already have, thanks. Pretty cool.
Everyone, I'm actually really amazed by like an independent release with zero promotion, zero marketing.
In the middle of COVID.
In the middle of COVID with literally no publication writing anything about it. Like, we just fully did this totally on our own.
$0.
With $0. And entirely you and me. No outside help whatsoever, except for mastering.
Yeah.
And we've racked up over 200,000 streams on 2 songs.
250.
I'm really
on
2 proud
songs.
Of us.
I think we have a million streams overall now.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone who's listened. I'm really excited to get started on the next one. That's actually kind of all I can think about.
Yeah, a lot of people went on and got it on Bandcamp too, which is super cool of them. And thank you for everybody listening. It's so cool.
God, that makes, I'm not going to cry, but I am a little bit. It just makes, I don't know, to not only like stream a record, but to actually go buy it. Like, it's just,
it's pretty badass.
It just feels really sweet. And, you know, while I'm on the same note, I don't think I thank my patrons enough. The Patreon is like so fucking fun. I love getting to make mixtapes every month for them and the bonus episodes for them. And, I don't think I appreciate them enough on the main feed. So thank you, everybody who has supported me or us or Henry Bardot or Perla or Marie, who's now my sister-in-law. Thank you so much for getting married to her. Anything else you want to shout out?
No, just our siblinghood.
Thank you to my brother, my sister, my two parents.
Mom and dad, yeah.
Thank you to the island community at large. Yep. It takes a village. Thank you to Marissa.
Metallica,
which is what I was also going to say.
Which is what we were conceived to.
And hey, Marissa, if you want to throw up a video of you playing Beat Saber to promote this episode, I would absolutely love to see
shout
it.
Shout out to VR at large. It's a big part of my life now.
Yes, Henry. And we will see you in 2 weeks. Bye bye. Woo!
Okay, that was
Touch the Jam.
Touch
the Jam.
Hey.
Touch
the Jam.
Touch
the Jam.
That was a HeadGum podcast.